Here in the land of the Sangamon, the Illinois, and the Mississippi, a land rich with the fragrance of American history, came a lad about a generation ago to establish his mark in the field of recreation and play. This lad came from Beardstown, Illinois, a small town on the Illinois River, not far from New Salem and Springfield, and inspired by the waters of the Sangamon and the atmosphere of Abe Lincoln and Ann Rutledge. Well, friends, the topic sentence of our theme today is the man who grew up among these historic scenes of America. His name, Harry Beaujean. Of course, you have heard of Harry Beaujean, dynamic, inspirational, and genial athletic director at the University of Dayton. Back in 1910, Harry was in Notre Dame Prep School. From Notre Dame, Harry graduated in 1917, after which he played professional football and served in the war. Shortly thereafter, 1922 to be exact, he came to the University of Dayton as coach. Now the University of Dayton, to which Harry Beaujean came in 1922, had all the possibilities for a big physical education program. All that was needed was a spark like Harry to develop its power and ability. When Harry appeared on the Dayton scene, the red and blue of Stuart Hill stood out with nearly a century-old background to answer his clarion call. In this new program of Harry's was, of course, a reserved seat for that autumn sport of football. I really don't believe there is a more ideal spot for King Football and his throne than the Stuart Hills and Dales. And there lies the U of D home. The old gridiron atop the hill was most certainly a misfit playing field. Hence, a spirited drive for a new football gridiron, a drive which gave our city the present University of Dayton Stadium. Our University of Dayton Stadium has been host to many teams from many parts of the United States. There are the Quantico Marines, Toledo, Marshall, Ohio, Ohio U, Wittenberg, Western Reserve, Ohio Wesleyan, and Denison, among others. While in retrospect, let us stop on November the 7th, 1925. On that November 7th, 22 years ago, the red and blue of Harry Beaujean faced the war cry and tomahawk of the Haskell Indians. Out of the West came the Haskell, fresh from conquest on Sunset Field. The spirit of James Thorpe and Carlisle was now alive in Haskell. But what a day was November the 7th, 1925. A day bad enough to dampen the spirits of any team. But the game must go on. Rain was falling in torrents. Stivers and Roosevelt had postponed their game. And where did the boys go? Why, to the stadium to join the crowd of 4,000. The gridiron was a blot of mud and water. It is now 5 minutes before two. And from the east end of the stadium comes the referee in shirt sleeves. And he was none other than genial Frank Lane. And no better official ever blew a whistle than Frank. Frank Lane and the captains are now in the center of the field. Captain Lou March speaks to the coaches, Beaujean and Bergen. And over the dormitory on the hill were the admonishing looks of bygone heroes, Al March and Babe Zimmerman. Frank Lane tosses something into the air. It wasn't wampum. It was an American coin. And the Haskell captain won the toss. It was a tense situation as the ball was placed in position for the kickoff. But the red and blue of U of D were ready as the boys ran into their places. There were Isley, Bolanik, Stroh, Snyder, Yegau, Urine, Hippa, McGarry, Mart, Cabrina, and Snelling. Haskell was big, alert, and confident. And why not? Had they not beaten the championship Gonzaga team a week before in the state of Washington? And this, to them, was just another game. The U of D was small, wiry, and confident. Haskell elected to kick, and away through the air went a challenging pigskin with a Longfellow refrain. Be still, sad heart, and cease repining. Behind the clouds is the sun still shining. Thy fate is the common fate of all. Into each life some rain must fall, Some days must be dark and dreary. So spake the challenging pigskin as it came to rest in the arms of Snelling on the 5-yard line. Through mud and mire, mire and mud, dashed Snelling until he reached the 23-yard line where he was tackled by a charging red man of Haskell. But the Flyers were ready as the rain fell. Yagow, the center, is over the ball. McGarry barks the signals. Yagow snaps the ball to McGarry, who takes a few steps and then passes to Cabrina. Cabrina is on his way. He squirms, he ducks, he fights on and on. Now he hesitates. He passes the 40, the 30, the 20. And now, in the midst of rain, mud, umbrellas, and cheers, Cabrina reaches a 7. 7 yards. Now the 3, where he dives over the goal line for a touchdown. Cabrina, the lad from the crossroads of the Pacific, Hawaii, if you please, had made a touchdown on the first play of the game. 6 points, enough to win the game 6-2. Try as they might, the Indians could not cross that U of D goal line, and thus ended Chapter 1 in Harry Beaujean's book of choice victories. Chapter 2 in Harry's book of victories finds us 12 years removed from that water-soaked ball of 1925. On the shores of Lake Erie stands a university with a name coined in post-revolutionary days. Its name is Western Reserve. And in 1937, this college from the town of Moses, Cleveland, had a football team which had dispatched all opposition for a stretch of 28 games. Bill Edwards, former star of Wittenberg and Buck Creek, was coach at Western Reserve. And on October the 30th, 1937, he brought his Red Cats to do battle with the Red and Blue Flyers and the U of D. 12,000 hysterical fans jammed the stadium as the Red and Blue dug in to repel the Red Cats. Jack Padley, that will-o'-the-wisp, was a blue-jerseyed phantom that October afternoon in 1937. Jack certainly proved the assertion that there's something in October sets a gypsy blood astir. Jack Padley was a gridiron poet in the land of Mad Miami that glamorous afternoon. Fine threads of gossamer floated across the playing field as the referee blew the whistle for the game is on. Dayton was the perfect football team that autumn day, the handiwork of my good friend Harry Beaujean, who was as nervous as a proverbial hen as the tide of battle ebbed and flowed. The shadows were now a little longer. From off the hill danced a squadron of autumn leaves. The University of Dayton, with Harry Beaujean as head pilot, had directed the Flyers to victory 18-6. And thus ends the second episode in our series of Dream Games. 2 years have passed away. Harry Beaujean and the Red and Blue are in California on November the 5th, 1939, and the biggest moment for the Red and Blue against the nonpareils of St. Mary's, California. Harry Beaujean versus Slip Madigan. That was the battle cry as the galloping gales and the Red and Blue passed, ran, and charged for supremacy. I believe a tie game is a perfect game. At least so it was in California, November the 5th, 1939. Sensational game ended in a 6-6 tie. Postmortems were out as everything was lovely and the goose hung high. Here was a perfect game in the shadows of the Golden Gate. Harry Beaujean, dynamic, affable, and analytic personality in the field of sports memories, directed the destinies of the University of Dayton for 25 years. Now he is director of athletics at the U of D. With that ever-energetic spirit to dare and to do. Many of us love to be dared. All of us love a fine, daring personality. And that is Harry Beaujean, who for so long directed the play of the Red and Blue on the gridiron. And now, I am going to dare a summary of Harry Beaujean. Harry Beaujean, a synonym of the Red and Blue of the University of Dayton. And here it is. Achieved greatly through a clear and powerful urge to accomplish something notable, through a superior persistence, through marked faith in yourself. Yes, I can do things if I try.